Wolf pack, what's going on? It's your boy, the Wolf of Roto Street. RotoStreetJournal.com, we breed and feed you fantasy wolves. I have officially come out of my hibernation because the 2023 NFL draft has wrapped up and it's time for my 2023 rookie rankings super show, a dynasty focused big mega show where I will run through every single position here to get you all caught up to speed on all the big name rookies at every position, some of the biggest questions you'll be facing in those 2023 rookie drafts to frame these rankings as well. I'm hoping to hit nearly 50 players talking about where they rank, their skill set, their player strengths and weaknesses, the landing spot and where they're at, and where I then ultimately rank them as a result. As mentioned, I'm going to be trying to hit 50 players again within about an hour. So I'm going to be going quick. This is just the need to know information about production, about athleticism, about landing spot. Please do, as we go, ask any questions you have, whether you're here live with us, get them on in. I'll answer anything we get live in that mailbag. Also happy to answer any questions we get on the comments after the fact. And of course, if you enjoy at any point what you're hearing, please do consider that thumbs up button. It helps us out so much to get out to more people. Thank you again for being here, tuning in. We got no time to waste, so let's dive right in at the quarterback position. Who belongs number one overall in your 2023 rookie drafts? Already, I am going different from the consensus. I'm going with CJ Stroud, who went number two overall to the Texans, but he is my number one ranked rookie quarterback in 2023 drafts. Right now, the ECR QB3, number one. Let's talk about why. I believe he's the best pure passer of this class. He can carve up defenses with touch, pacing, ball speed, smooth delivery, clean footwork, incredibly accurate. All those things you look for in your quarterback, he does them perfectly. Solid size at 6'3", good athleticism, and that's what I really like about him. He doesn't always maximize this escapability right now. We don't see a ton of rushing, but he has all the athleticism in the world to really carve into that. He doesn't have the cannon arm either, but man, can he drop those passes in the tight windows. He's not scared to do it. And this was fully on display. Again, that cannon arm, that great touch when he chucked 85 touchdowns across his past two seasons. That broke Drew Brees' record for most of all time. He had that masterpiece against Georgia. This is where I really fell in love. 348 yards, four touchdowns, running more often in that game. I loved everything I saw. Now, landing spot-wise, I dig it. I know it doesn't seem amazing on paper, but I love the 49ers passing game coordinator, now the offensive coordinator there. Very friendly quarterback offense there. They also like to do a lot of rollouts, a lot of seams. Maybe that's where we see that untapped rushing potential really get dug into. The weapons seem lackluster. Robert Woods, Nico Collins, Dalton Schultz, the vets here, John Metchie maybe coming into his own. I also really like Tank Dell and Xavier Hutchinson, the two rookies they added there. So I actually don't think this landing spot is nearly as bad as people think. I think the line is much, much better. Huge investments all around. So I think this is a good landing spot, a high floor, given the arm, given the prototypical quarterback strengths, with an untapped ceiling potential if he does finally go into this. So especially in super flex leagues, I think CJ Stroud can't miss. You're going to have multiple years of quality passing as they continue to build up this offense. So number two for me is Bryce Young, the first overall pick of the 2023 draft. He might be the best quarterback in here in terms of many skills we'll dive into, but he's not my preferred fantasy guy. Let's dig into some of the positives, negatives, and what I think of this fit. With these positives, Nick Saban, his coach, described Young as a point guard. He does have some basketball experience, and that translated really well with that vision, the spatial awareness, the instincts, all there. The best in this class, no doubt about it. He's a quick-minded player. He processes things really, really well. Some GMs actually labeled him a genius. We saw that brand new test. He tested incredible. That's why Stroud actually ended up falling out of one, potentially, is that S2 test. Bryce Young was incredible at that. He's a great improviser when things break down. He handles pressure well, and he's deadly accurate. Similar shot, not a cannon arm, but man, can he put that ball exactly where he wants it and ultimately set single-season Bama records. 4,872 yards, 47 touchdowns this last year. Finished number two in career passing and touchdowns there with 8,356 yards and 80 touchdowns overall. Of course, the negative is quite obvious. The size, generously listed at 5'10". He will be the shortest quarterback when he steps on the field this season. 368 quarterbacks have played in the NFL since 2000, and only 9 have been shorter than 6 feet, and only 3 current quarterbacks are under that measure, with Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, and Bears backup PJ Walker. Bryce Young's smaller than all of them, 190 pounds, my ass. This guy is tiny. He could be frail, undersized, maybe making him more susceptible to injury. He played all the games at his career in Alabama, again, with that elite escapability, but he doesn't run. He's smaller than Kyler, doesn't run nearly as much. So he could run, but doesn't do it nearly as often. He often gets comped to Drew Brees for the great arm, but undersized ability. That would obviously be an amazing ceiling. Talking about the landing spot, similar to CJ Stroud, the weapons don't seem great. Adam Thielen, DJ Chark, now new rookie Jonathan Mingo, who I do really love. We'll talk about later, but I do love Frank Reich, a bright overall offensive mind. He's pass happy. 4 of his 8 seasons in Indianapolis were top 10 in pass attempts. He was top 2 in yards and TDs when he had a great quarterback in Andrew Luck. So I really, really like that spot overall. I just don't fully love the size, the risk there, and the weapons do make me a bit nervous with Bryce Young knocking him down to 2. Now, this is the highest upside player in this entire class, Anthony Richardson, and he goes to the Colts, my favorite landing spot for any rookie. In fact, if I'm talking about a single quarterback league, not Superflex Dynasty League, which are the majority of them, I want a sure thing in Superflex. You can't really miss when you have to start 2 quarterbacks. You want someone you know is going to be in there. Anthony Richardson, so raw, but so freakish, could end up fizzling out more than any of these guys, but could also blow up far higher than anybody, especially for fantasy. Let's talk about those reasons. 6'4", 244 pounds, and a 4.43 40, 40 and a half inch vertical. Those are insane measures for any position, never mind the quarterback spot. This is Cam Newton-sized Lamar Jackson with similar touchdown upside. He broke 39 tackles last year as a quarterback. The ceiling is limitless, especially the arm, the strongest of the class, and it's by a country mile. He can deliver every throw with zip, but the key at quarterback is accuracy, accuracy, accuracy. He only completed 53.8% of his throws, was particularly rough in the short and intermediate game, scattershot tendencies, lackluster field vision. That's what the risk is here, and why he could flame out fast is if he can't hit those short throws and get the ball to his receivers quickly, it's going to be a very quick NFL career here. But the landing spot is absolutely pristine. He's got a good skill position group. You got Michael Pittman, Alec Pierce, a very exciting sophomore, and now new rookie Josh Downs, a slot maestro. Great weapons cabinet. Plus, of course, Jonathan Taylor forming the perfect RPO partner. Shane Steichen, also from the Eagles, the perfect coordinator to be here. He maximized Hurts' mobility for so long. He developed Justin Herbert throughout his rookie year. In fact, you look at it, 2020 Justin Herbert, rookie QB records for touchdown passes, 31, and passing yards per game, 289, averaging nearly 23 fantasy points per game. The best season he's ever had in his entire career was while Shane Steichen was the QB coach. He then goes over to the Eagles. Jalen Hurts ranks tied with Patrick Mahomes, behind only Josh Allen in fantasy points per game across those last 2 seasons. If anybody's going to squeeze the best out of Anthony Richardson, it is Shane Steichen. This is definitely the best spot. So again, if it's a single QB league, I like biting the bullet, taking that risk on, because you can make that ground up much easier. If he fizzles out in your dynasty league and it's one QB, so be it. You can find somebody else. There'll be more available. 2 QB leagues, it's a little bit tougher to absorb that risk. Depends on your risk tolerance, though, because if you can handle that, especially if you have 2 pretty solid signal callers for right now and you can take that bridge year or two, see what Richardson is, there's no higher ceiling in this class at any position, including quarterback. Cam Newton, more speed. I absolutely love the player, and again, would have him number 1 in single QB leagues. Superflex is the only reason he's down at number 3. After that, big tier drop in my rankings, which again, you can find over at rotostreetjournal.com. Rookie rankings are up for all of these positions, so everything we talk about, you can find them on over there. Will Levis is my number 4 quarterback, the 4th quarterback drafted in this class. He goes to the Titans, and I actually love that landing spot. Maybe not for the short term, but long term is a great nurturing environment and a great team to be a part of. He has all those tools you look for: size, arm, impressive athleticism, picking up yards after contact as a runner all last year. He's tough. He's competitive. They love him as a leader throughout his college career. One of the biggest praises you'd hear about him. He can get in his own head. You see some forced inaccurate throws at times when it gets tight there, but the landing spot, as I mentioned, a great place to blossom in a functional organization, a functional head coach like Mike Vrabel. The line is solid and got even better when you add first rounder Peter Skonorsky to there. The wide receiver corps, not much to write home about. Treylon Burks, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, Chris Moore, it's ugly. So that is the downside here, but it is, again, a nice environment. Hopefully they can continue to add weapons around Will Levis over the next year. You're not going to get much early on, but I do think this is a good spot dynasty-wise. Last quarterback worth talking about is Hendon Hooker. There's easy red flags to spot here. My number five quarterback, he's 25. That's the same age as Tua, who's now in his fourth year in the league. He suffered a torn ACL in November 2022. He's largely a system QB, a beautiful system nonetheless over there at Tennessee. Tons of play action, tons of great designs that got receivers wide open. Still, there's a lot to love about Hendon Hooker. He was the Heisman favorite before his ACL tear, wildly productive throughout his college career, 105 total touchdowns, 11,057 yards of total offense. Damn, he could get it done in every single way. Smooth thrower, great on the move, awesome with rollouts and boots. Love all that. He can make all the throws from any angles. He had a near 70% completion percentage, while averaging 9.5 yards per attempt. That's amazing. He's good under pressure as well, and I do love this landing spot long-term with the Lions. Now, obviously not a year one guy, and I do think it's very important to track what is going on with Jared Goff's contract. They're apparently interested in extending him the next 3 years. That could wipe out Hendon Hooker's even, you know, long-term upside here. It might not be till his next contract, and then he'd be almost 30 by the time he's getting his second gig in the NFL. So something to worth monitoring, is he going to be behind Jared Goff for three more years, even longer than that? But if he could take over, you got ASB, you got weapons galore, Jahmyr Gibbs, a great offensive line there with the Lions, tons of upside if he does take over. The only other quarterback worth mentioning before we turn our attention to running backs is Stetson Bennett. Obviously insane things at Georgia last year, winning the national title, undersized, old, not a great arm, but man, the Rams must have saw something making him the sixth quarterback off the board. And we got a hobbled Stafford. Who knows how he's going to come back? Anybody learning under McVay, under the great arm of Stafford, I believe is worth a last round flyer in super flex leagues. You're not drafting him in one QB dynasty leagues. There's no point to having him there. But if you play super flex and you have some patience, you have a deep bench, he could be a really good stash. Thank you again, guys, for being here. We're going to move to the running back position now. Again, that thumbs up button would be so greatly appreciated. Let's talk about the guy everyone knows, Bijan Robinson. Is he as generational as everyone keeps saying? Is he the locked in 101 to all your rookie drafts? Let's talk about it and find out. I'm in unanimous agreement with pretty much every scout, anyone with eyeballs. Bijan is among the best running back prospects in the last decade. There's truly almost zero faults to his game. He's 6 foot thick, 215, a unique mix of the power, the vision, the elusiveness, scheme versatile, in that he can be a one kite maestro for the zone scheme, one cut, or burst through the right gaps in a power scheme. He has insane acceleration for his side. He doesn't lose speed when he makes those cuts, and he can catch. Good receiver. He is earned a position best, Bijan, 8 deep targets last year. Jahmyr Gibbs saw 0. Michael Wilson of Stanford saw the same amount of deep targets. He was a deep target specialist over there. So that shows you the versatility. And we already had Arthur Smith come out and say he is far more than a running back. Despite being on this subpar Texas team, bottom barrel offensive line, Bijan still averaged 6.3 yards per carry over his career, became the first Longhorn to run for over 1,500 yards and top 300 receiving yards in a season. In fact, and courtesy of Scott Barrett of Fantasy Points, one of the best follows out there, among all running backs to spend their entire NCAA career in the Power 5 since 2014 and average 100 rushing yards per game and 25 receiving yards per game, this is the list. McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Bijan Robinson, end the list. That is it. That tells you the company he is among, and I think that is a great comp, is Saquon Barkley. I actually think Bijan is a better overall runner. Not quite the athlete, not quite the receiver of a Saquon, but better pure runner. Arthur Smith, meanwhile, has built around running backs in the past. Even without a clear number one last year, Smith's Falcons led the NFL in rushing attempts with 559. The offensive line ended up shocking with top five overall unit per PFF grades, top three specifically in run blocking. You look at these underwhelming talents, Algier, Cordarrelle Patterson, Caleb Huntley, every single one of them averaged 4.8 or more yards per carry. And again, as alluded to earlier, we already have Arthur Smith highlighting Bijan is far more than a running back. They've talked about trying him out in the slot, gauging that ability as a receiver. Such an explosive runner, according to Arthur Smith. He's a home run hitter. However you get the football in his hands, boom. Love this guy. Everybody does. I don't need to sing his praises any longer, but you know Bijan Robinson is locked in number 101 in your drafts. Now, Jahmyr Gibbs goes to the Lions at 12 overall, the running back two off the board, and becomes an immediate must draft given that capital. Let's talk about why. He's an absolutely electric athlete. 4.3, 6.40, 13th best combine since 2000. Best time ever among the position. Insanely fast game speed too. It's not just straight line. Very impressive cuts. Controls his body and tempo very, very well. Great vision. Can feel the openings. Sets up the blocks. Weaves through defenses. He's a joy to watch run. But the real key and why you love this kid, Jahmyr Gibbs, is his pass catching upside. He is the best pass catching prospect of the last 5 years and among the best of the last decade. Many comp him to Austin Eckler, Alvin Kamara, even Christian McCaffrey. Now, is he destined to be one of them, or is he more of a Reggie Bush, a CJ Spiller, DeAndre Swift? When you look at that draft capital, 12th overall by the Lions, I think it's closer to the McCaffreys and Kamaras. It is a perfect landing spot with the Lions, a top five run blocking unit in the NFL. If you see their video celebration, could the team be any higher and happier that they got Jahmyr Gibbs? I mean, we thought Dan Campbell might smash a table the way he was celebrating there. You know, Dan Campbell as well comes from the Saints. We know how they used running backs under Campbell and obviously Peyton, where he was groomed. Kamara was a monster. Collectively last year, Detroit's running backs ranked second among all teams in expected fantasy points per game. That was 28.3 expected points of their backfield per game. Yes, we know David Montgomery's arrived there. He does have a big contract. He is going to get a bevy of touchdowns, but still, with this draft capital, I can't imagine we're not seeing about 55% of the work go to Gibbs, similar to that situation where we had Eckler and Melvin Gordon with the Chargers. Eckler was still the running back four, despite Gordon hogging the carries and plenty of targets there too. That's what I could see with Gibbs. He's not only the clear running back two in this class, I think when you think about dynasty down the road, he's also clearly in top five of startup leagues at this point. Now, the big question then becomes, who should come off the board next? Once these big two are gone, where are we looking? I have a very, very clear answer for that one. And that is, I got to find my thing here. Ooh, one sec. We have, thank you for your patience here, Devin Achane to the Dolphins. Sorry, something got deleted here. All right. And we are back. So my clear cut number three tier of his own, and that's how we've gone so far. Bijan, then Jahmyr Gibbs, and then tier of his own, Devin Achane from Texas A&M. He was the running back six off the board, goes to Miami at 84. And I love everything about the player. I love everything about the fit. Let's talk about both here. 4.3, 2.40, the third fastest among all combine participants. And he's not just a straight line speed guy. Now, two of my favorite draft analysts, Danny Kelly of The Ringer, Scott Barrett, as we've already talked about, they have a pre-draft conversation. This is what Danny Kelly says. I don't say this lightly because I know everyone compares any given fast guy to Tyreek Hill, but Achane comes the closest I've seen over the last 5 years to moving with the twitchy, turbocharged acceleration, explosive see-ya speed of Tyreek Hill. Boom. That's really important. Then we have Scott Barrett in that same conversation. If he lands in Miami, may God have mercy on our souls. And where does he go? But Miami. One, they absolutely love him. This is why it's perfect. We have Mike McDaniel say, we spent some time with him, got to know him, and as a person watched his film 2-3 weeks ago, Mike was convicted in his love for the player. We all were, but Mike was so very, very enthused, and the GM just starts cracking up while explaining it because of how much that Miami loved this kid. They value and maximize speed and running after the catch. Perfect for Achane's skill set. Tons of speed space, given that you have Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, opening that middle of the field for him to just get the dump offs, the screens. He's going to have oodles of space. And plus the run scheme, outside zone, absolutely perfect given this is his skill set. This is what Dane Brugler, one of my favorite analysis, we're going to talk about frequently in here. This is how he described Devin. Solid vision, insane sports car acceleration. It's instant, allowing him to scoot through lanes or find the back door when the designed run is taken away. He makes quick reads, collects his feet, and accelerates out of it with sprinting speed. Rare acceleration allows him to access run paths most backs can't. A bouncy runner with springs and calves to stack cuts on cuts on cuts. Aggressively presses the hole with the footwork to plant and redirect without any wasted motion. Runs tough between the tackles. Improved patience to follow his blocks, proved to be a capable pass catcher with promising ball skills, and did encouraging things as a blocker as well. And the last fifth reason why I love this guy, no, I'm reading long, but that's how much I love him. Who's he got to beat out? Raheem Mostert, Jeff Wilson? Those guys average 4.9 and 4.7 yards per carry in the scheme, and neither. I know I loved Wilson in the past. Comments might hate me for this, but this guy is on a different level of Cade. He's tiny, Wolf. You know, nobody that size ever pans out. He weighed 188 pounds, and since 2000, there have only been three running backs to weigh less than 190 and finish as a top 24 running back or better. That was Warwick Dunn, Darren Sproles, and Tariq Cohen. Not a great hit rate. We're talking about an outlier here, but that's how much I believe in the kid. I absolutely am buying. This is the perfect spot for him to be an outlier, as well as his skill set. It is just such a great mesh. If you want, his question is toughness any further. Can this small guy handle a workhorse load? Well, let's look at it. 19.6 carries per game, 3.6 receptions, 129.8 yards from scrimmage per game, and then he suffers a foot injury. Instead of shutting things down like so many other prospects would have at his spot, you know, look at the eye towards the draft, he decides, I owe it to my teammates, goes out, plays against LSU in their final game, and against the top competition, what does he do? 215 yards, 16 forced mixed tackles, multiple touchdowns. The guy can do it all. I am a diehard fan of the player, of the fit. He should be your clear-cut number three and a fantasy first rounder, even in super flex rookie drafts. Now, after him, it does get a little dicey because most would lump him in this tier. But Zach Charbonnet is also most often the number three back off the board. And to me, I am definitely going Devin Akane. But let's talk about Charbonnet. He was the running back three off the board. Pick 52-2. Of course, Seattle. Pete Carroll just can't help himself. He needs to get more running backs despite Ken Walker having himself an amazing rookie year. The landing spot, obviously a concern. But let's talk about the player first. Insane production last year. He led the FBS in all-purpose yards per game, 168, Pac-12 in rushing with 1359, also adding 14 touchdowns. He has good vision, tempo, hits the hole well, tough guy to tackle, great contact balance, and he's among the better receiving backs in college football last year, averaging nearly 20% of their target share, a very solid pass protector, maybe the best pass protector in this class, but he's not very dynamic. He's got average explosiveness, not a ton of wiggle or long speed despite constantly churning forward. And he also played in Chip Kelly's UCLA system, a great, maybe the best run scheme in all of college football. Produced, you know, 160 yards per game for LaMichael James, Kendren Barner, Josh Kelly, and none of them have ever lived up to anything at the NFL level. The draft capital's there, round two, third running back off the board. But Walker is clearly the guy, in my opinion. He's a way better prospect, a way better runner, and he's fresh off a very good rookie season. So the immediate path to receiving work could be there for Charbonnet, but then they also add Kenny McIntosh, a great pass catcher, in round seven. So the best case here, Charbonnet does resemble DeMarco Murray, but to me he's more A.J. Dillon, especially in that sense of a second fiddle here. I see it as an Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon type of situation with Charbonnet, unfortunately, being that second fiddle, which drops him, despite being the third running back off the board, to my running back four. Give me Devin Akane ahead of him. Now, one guy that I am very intrigued to learn a little bit more about, Kendre Miller. He's a running back four off the board at pick 71-2. Unfortunately, the Saints, which seems like a hideous landing spot, but maybe it's not as bad as meets the eye. First of all, I got to say, tons of smart people are all in on Kendre Miller, especially Scott Barrett, his third running back in his post-draft rankings. I love Scott. I trust him with everything. So maybe I need to reevaluate and bump Kendre Miller above Charbonnet, consider him in Devin Akane tier. Let's find out. He's 5'11", 218, prototypical size. He had 1,399 rushing yards and an impressive 17 touchdowns. He's averaged 6.7 yards per carry across his TCU career. A patient runner, lively feet, slices through the openings, tempo, all that good stuff. He's competitive. He's a power back. Nah. But he's got that little bit of an upright style that can definitely leave him susceptible to injuries. Little bit of a work in progress as a receiver, and that's why I don't necessarily love him. I want my rookies, I want all my backs to be able to have some ceiling as a pass catcher. Maybe he was just underutilized, but hasn't really flashed a ton of ability in that sense. But he's got a strong lower body, great agility, great acceleration, so maybe I do need to put him up. He's also very young. He's not even 21 yet. The landing spot, you got the capital, fourth running back off the board. They also just invested in Jamal Williams. I know he's just a guy, a very pedestrian, but definitely a big touchdown vulture. Just led the NFL in rushing touchdowns. There is a real chance that Kamara is in his last year with the Saints. If he's not in prison, he's definitely going to be suspended for a good part of this year, which will give Kendre Miller a spot to just take over that Mark Ingram role. And what if he's out the whole year, Kamara? There could be a real shot at a huge role for Kendre Miller right away. And I bet this is among the last seasons for Kamara regardless. So the long-term upside does look very good with Kendre Miller. And with so many smart people in on him, five feels perhaps a little too low. Now, number six, I go Rashawn Johnson. He was the seventh running back off the board. He goes to Chicago, one of the better landing spots for a number of reasons. Let's talk about what this kid brings to the table. He didn't see a ton of work, which is always a red flag, except for the fact that he played behind Bijan Robinson. Look at Josh Jacobs. He never out-touched Damian Harris in three seasons. Alvin Kamara cut less carries than Jalen Hurd and Josh Kelly. That's ridiculous. Priest Holmes was buried behind Ricky Williams at Texas as well, and then becomes a megastar with 26 fantasy points per game. So it's not a death knell that he couldn't play above Bijan Robinson, a generational talent. Roshan himself, an absolute bull, 225 pounds, 6 feet tall. He's powerful. He rips through arm tackles. He's a beast. Our favorite stat, one of the most predictive of college running backs, according to Scott Barrett, of course, again, keep citing him. Johnson not only beats out Robinson in career missed tackles forced per touch, but he ranks the best of any Power 5 running back since 2014. Javonte Williams, Bijan Robinson, and then Roshan Johnson forcing a missed tackle on nearly half of his touches. Very solid pass protector, quality pass catcher too. He's an average athlete, but no frills, powerful runner, bull of a guy. Landing spot-wise, you have Khalil Herbert, who led the NFL in yards per carry last year, but just a six-round pick, not of this regime as well. They do bring in Donta Foreman, who I do really like as a player, which means this could be just a three-headed nightmare. Plus, you got Justin Fields potentially vulturing the touchdowns at the goal line too. So the path isn't the best, but it certainly couldn't be worse. This is the guy they hand-picked. It doesn't seem like that much upside when Montgomery just ranked 29th in fantasy points per game last year. Herbert was 39th. So if it's an ugly committee, it could be gross, but this is their hand-picked guy. The other guys could be out as early as next year. So I like Roshan Johnson finally getting his chance to show that he should be a starter. And the last guy of this tier, and these are like the last, you know, second round rookie picks. We'll talk about some later round guys in a sec. But Tajay Spears going as the running back 5 off the board to the Titans at 81st overall. Let's talk about what we like and don't like about him. Now, if we had no red flags on health, he might be number 4, maybe even number 3 on my list. He's got explosive read plant burst. He's 4.52, a little underwhelming for a 5'9 guy, but I mean 92nd percentile vertical, 87th percentile broad jump. I know you're not leaping on the NFL field, but it does flash your burst, your extreme athletic upside here. He did average 16.4 carries, 1.6 receptions, and 131.2 yards from scrimmage per game. 21 total touchdowns last year. Insane. Tied for the lead in the FBS. He's slippery. He's dynamic start-stop. He's got patient vision and darting acceleration. Definitely the best when he's used on outside zones and counter plays. And he's decent in the pass game. Definitely functional, but needs to get a little more dependable as both a pass catcher and a blocker. He is a small school back, which usually is a red flag, but the best team he faced in the Cotton Bowl last year, 219 yards from scrimmage, 18 touches against USC. there, as well as 4 touchdowns, completely dominated. Then you bring him to the Senior Bowl, the best of the best, and he was named the Player of the Week. He also just has real steal potential. But here's the biggest red flag. Here's the reason he's not. All those things sound great. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reports Spears suffered 2 torn ACLs in the past, and then when evaluated at the combine, this I just don't even understand, a test reveals full thickness cartilage loss and no ACL in his knee. So the guy doesn't have an ACL. He already apparently has arthritis in his knees from those 2 surgeries. As somebody who has 2 ACL tears myself, it doesn't feel good. Arthritic knees, bone spurs, that's really not stable. You got a bunch of these pro football docs like David Chow saying he could have a good career, but it could be very, very short as well. So we're talking about dynasty. Longevity is important here, and running back is already a position where that's a question mark. Going to have a hard time with that dark cloud lingering over him, despite loving the player, the talent. I really do like Tennessee. I know Henry's there, but he's on his last legs here. We could see a great system for this kid as early as next year as the lead back, but is he going to even be healthy to take advantage of that? We will find out. We will see. Now let's talk about the best of the rest at the running back position. A few later round rookies who could be that next Eli Mitchell, that next Damian Pierce, and blow up late. I'll highlight 4 to 5 names at each position when we get here. Who could be that Eli Mitchell, the late round sleepers of the running back position? Tank Bigsby to the Jags. Just the name Tank Bigsby sounds like a beast, right? But let's talk about it, the player. He could be a little more decisive. He could have a little bit better vision and feel for the creases. But, man, does he have some upfield explosiveness. He's a good receiver, a good blocker. He has the potential to just get right in there and play in either gaps or zones, very versatile. The schemes, he goes to the Jags, a team that's definitely going to put up its points. Could definitely Tank Bigsby become that goal line hammer after 10 touchdowns in back-to-back years. I could easily see him having a good career there as the complement to Travis Etienne. I also really like Chris Rodriguez going to the Commanders. Nothing special about the kid, but an absolutely wrecking ball type of running back. He runs very, very hard. 672 of his yards came after contact. 902 yards on the season, nearly 75% of it was after contact. 220, forcing a ton of missed tackles. And apparently the had a third round grade on Rodriguez. Seems like a pretty repetitive skill set to Brian Robinson, but he was very, very inefficient, among the least efficient backs in the league. Maybe he just needed a healthy year to really recover from being shot. Crazy, just words come out of my mouth here. But this could be a big down for Brian Robinson and a big up for Rodriguez if the team loves him as much as they promise and say they do. Definitely one of those bulls to look for in the later rounds. I also want to highlight Chase Brown, who goes to the Bengals. Mediocre run strength, definitely needs to be better as a pass protector. Of course, when you're on a team with Joe Burrow, that's crucial. But he's got very, very good vision, controlled footwork, definitely can translate well as a rotational back and potential to evolve into an every down guy in a great spot. One, Mixon just seems like he's on the fritz with this team, given all this offseason, how that's unwound. And 2, if Mixon gets hurt, look at what Samaje Perine did. He averaged 19 carries, 7 targets, and was top 5 running back across all 3 of his starts. 30.2, 19.3, and 21.5 points. So even just as a handcuff, Chase Brown brings a lot to the table because I think the path there, who's got to be Chris Evans at this point, definitely has a very clear path to the number 2 back in an amazing offense that we've seen yield huge dividends in the past. And the last name I want to toss out there as a late round running back to keep your eyes on, Dwayne McBride going to the Vikings. He was the top scorer in PFF's elusive rating among all these college backs, 161.3. He averaged a career yards per carry of 7.28. That's the 9th best among all running backs since 2000 with a minimum of 300 carries. He leads this class in explosive play per touch, 0.19 since 2014. He ranks 2nd best among all running backs in yards after contact per attempt and 4th best by career missed tackles forced per touch. And now you got reports that Dalvin Cook could be moved. You got Alexander Mattison, who was ultimately one of the least efficient backs in the league last year, potentially as his only competition if Dalvin Cook does get moved. They're rumored to be a June 1st type of cut situation there. So, yes, he could be better as a pass catcher and blocker, and that could restrict his role, but great contact balance, great vision, good lateral agility, and some insane efficiency metrics that highlight that Dwayne McBride, who's best as a zone scheme, goes to a great zone team, could be an absolute stud. Deuce Vaughn as well. I mean, how do you not love the production? The guy averaged at least 100 rushing yards per game and 35 receiving yards per game. The only pack since 25 in the Power 5 to do that. Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon, and then Deuce Vaughn. So pretty damn good company, but he's 5'5", 179 pounds since 1995. Exactly zero running backs at that weight or height have gained 600 yards per scrimmage in the NFL. Maybe he could be Darren Sproles, but this is among the worst athletic profiles too, running like a 4.56 40. Ugh, disgusting. So I love the player. I love the tenacity. I love what he did in college. I love the versatility for Deuce Vaughn, but we are talking about the outlier of outliers. If he succeeds, give me a cane if I'm going to the outliers. Alrighty, we will now move to the wide receiver position. We're cruising here, 35 minutes in through two positions. Let's go, Wolfpack. If you enjoy what you're hearing, get that thumbs up button. Would be so greatly appreciated. Continue to help us grow. Thank you again so much for spending your time here learning about the rookie class. We just now have to talk about some wide receivers. I'm just fixing one quick banner here. Alrighty, and let's dive in, Wolfpack. Now, JSN, Jackson Smith, Jigba. Does he belong in a tier of his own among the rookie receivers? My answer to that is an emphatic 100% yes. First receiver off the board, he goes to the Seahawks. He's Dane Brugler's number one receiver of this class, one of my favorites. Let's talk about why this kid is so great. Not an elite size speed guy. And the big knock on him, this is the one that I can't really get over, is the fact that everyone says he's just a slot guy. Let's be real. Let's talk about this kid. 2 seasons ago, I know last year health concerns didn't really play, but 2 years ago, Jackson Smith, Njigba, goes 95 receptions, 1,606 yards, and 9 touchdowns on a team that Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, who are among the 2 top young receiver talents in the league right now, both of them have come out and said, JSN is the best of us. I don't know if I buy that. I love both those players. I think they bring a little bit more versatility to the table. But in terms of what he does and does well, Smith Njigba is in a class of his own. Even his ex-teammates saying that. Even his ex-coach, Brian Hartline, maybe the best receiver coach in college football, ranked JSN above Wilson Olave. He said he thinks Smith Njigba is going to lead the NFL in receptions and receiving yards in no time. Big high praise from one of the best receiving coaches out there. He was competing for targets along these guys and racked up 28.4% more receiving yards than Wilson, 45.2% more yards than Olave, ending with those gaudy numbers, 343 yards better than the next best wide receiver season in the prolific history of Ohio State. That's Marvin Harrison Jr.'s season last year of 2022. Maybe the number one receiver in Debbie right now. Smith Njigba had 300 more yards than him. Across the full season, averaged 123.5 yards per game. That's the second best mark of any Power 5 receiver before their age 20 season since 2000. The person ahead of him, Ja'Marr Chase. Pretty damn good company to be mentioned among. He's got elite quickness. You look at that combine, broke records for the cone drills there. Has, you know, Justin Jefferson type in and out of his breaks is what people have been comparing to him. And yeah, Just a slot. Is that really a negative? One, I don't think that's true. I think JSN has plenty more to his game. But yeah, sure, 83% of his receiving yards did come out of the slot. So maybe he will be pigeonholed there. But look at Cooper Kupp, maybe the best receiver of the last 5 years. ASB, another power slot. Just because you're so damn dominant at a role, it doesn't mean that should be considered a negative. And I do think you can kick him outside. Now, immediate value, probably not the highest of this class, given you're playing with Lockett, with DK Metcalf in a run-heavy scheme. It's going to be a lot of competition. Plus, the Seahawks ran 11 personnel three-receiver sets among the lowest in the league. I do imagine they drafted him for a reason. They're going to switch that type of lineup formation and let him just – that could be seen as a negative. Imagine that you have to defend those two on the outside and then one of the best slots, potentially the best slot receiver in the league from day one when he gets in there. I don't know how you're going to stop the Seahawks offense. We'll talk about Geno Smith on a veteran podcast soon enough. They're going to be dominant, and he is clearly worth a top three pick in single quarterback leagues and honestly, potentially even worth top three in double super flex leagues as well. Tier by himself, love JSN. But then the question begs, who should go after him? And this is one of the biggest questions in the league right now is you're sitting there, JSN, Gibbs, obviously Robinson, and a couple of those quarterbacks are gone in your Superflex league. Which rookie receiver should go after JSN to round out round one? And the debate often comes down to Jordan Addison, Quentin Johnston, and then Zay Flower as well. Let's talk about who I have at number two first. My number two receiver is Addison going to the Vikings. Fourth receiver off the board, number 23 overall. Dane Brugler's number two receiver of this class. We know the negatives. Doesn't have the ideal size, doesn't have a ton of play strength, and legitimately worrisome success rate against press coverage. Right around 50%. That was 17th percentile, according to Matt Harmon, reception perception, one of the best statters out there that you should look at. But he does so much so well. That's why he led the nation in receiving yards as a sophomore, becoming the third Biletnikoff winner as a sophomore. He goes and transfers to USC, and a slight downturn there, but still played really well. Time speed underwhelms for that lack of size at 4.49, but the play speed is very high, and especially in and out of his breaks. He just doesn't lose any type of momentum, any movement, just extremely crafty. The dude just knows how to get open. And that's such a valuable skill, whether zone, whether man, when they're moving them over. The success rate on digs, curls, flats, the best of the class, according to Matt Harmon. I do think the Devonta Smith comparisons, they're not fair. Smith won over 80% of his press coverage routes, whereas Addison again hovered around 50%. They're just different specimens. We got more arm length for Devonta, definitely a little more physical, even though they're both undersized. That's a pretty weak draw in my comparison, but he still has that type of ability to find the soft spots, get open in all those ranges of the field, every single level. And then the best part about this spot, the Vikings. Third in pass attempts, sixth in pass yards, fourth in TDs. Adam Thielen's gone. That's 107 targets vacated. And immediately, Addison, I like KJ Osborne, but man, Addison is much better of a threat. You got Osborne definitely stretching the defense. You got number ones focusing on Jefferson, probably double covered all game. We're going to have Addison facing number two, number three corners out of the slot. He's going to feast. And this is a perfect spot in terms of immediate production. Honestly, probably an even better spot than JSN if you're talking about redraft leagues. I think Addison feasts. I think he's nice and safe, regardless, a high floor, high ceiling, even if he's always the number two to Justin Jefferson. I think he can do plenty of damage in that role. Now, if you're looking for higher upside, Quentin Johnston might have the most upside in this entire class. He was the second wide receiver off the board at number 21, going to a perfect spot with the Chargers. He does need some polish with his route running, with his ball finishing skills, but this is among the biggest big play threats in the league with some real size. This is a pipsqueak class, as we've talked about with a lot of these guys. Quentin Johnston's no pipsqueak. You know, near 6'4", 200-ish pounds, the guy can blaze as well. He's got all those starting traits, great success rate against man coverage, but a limited route tree, limited role throughout TCU makes it a little tricky to judge what his actual production will be at the NFL level, given he hasn't been asked to do a whole ton. Maybe there's a whole umbrella that we haven't seen unleashed with his route tree. We will find out how many branches he can add on there. He didn't get asked to do much, like we were just saying, but that does, you know, he did play small. That was the one kind of downside for the big receiver of this class. He didn't have a high contested catch rate, so didn't play up to his size. But, man, the range here could go from Christian Watson and T. Higgins all the way to Breshad Perriman or some of the comparisons, the ceilings and the floors. So if you're willing, similar to Anthony Richardson at the quarterback position, you want that high-risk, high-reward type of guy, nobody has the ceiling of him. You get this chance to grow with Justin Herbert in an offense led by Kellen Moore, which is an absolute beauty, given that Tack, when he was healthy for three seasons under Kellen Moore, he was top two in passing yards for two of those 3 years. He was top five in passing TDs for two of those three. The offense was number one in total yards for two of those three, top six in touchdowns in two of those three. And the only time that Dak's healthy season was not within those top six, top two, all those impressive metrics, was when Mike McCarthy really hamstrung the offense last year, decided, I'm going to take over. I'm going to enforce that we run the ball more. He ends up firing Moore because he scored too many points and decided to pass up too often. None of that matters when he goes over here to pair up with Justin Herbert, an aerial bonanza. Man, this could just be a great immediate and long-term, especially with Keenan Allen on his back nine. So with that type of upside, yes, the floor is low. And we've seen it before. There's Jalen Reagor cops coming out. Yeah, they passed on Jordan Addison, the sure thing, who just like Justin Jefferson, goes to the Vikings, another TCU receiver that has this freakish type of profile, goes ahead of the sure thing. Could we see fate repeat itself? Maybe. But this is obviously a better spot, in my opinion, for Quentin Johnson, who I also think is a much better player than Jalen Reagor. And now we round out those first round receivers, the absolute loss, kind of this tier. Zay Flowers, what does he bring to the table? Well, he's number three of the list for me. Third receiver off the board, 22, to the Ravens. He's undersized, doesn't have the best skill set for outside work, it doesn't seem, but a lot of metrics given that size. You'd be shocked at how well he, this is more similar to Devonta Smith, in my opinion, than Jordan Addison. Very savvy competitor. You know, definitely got some very strong play speed, good pacing, creates space really well. And what I love about him, played all three wide receiver spots at BC, moved all over the place, 52% behind the line, 48% on the line, 72% success rate against the press, 70th percentile for that, despite being undersized. And then he goes at the combine, adds, you know, 10 pounds of muscle, but boosts his speed score. All those things tell me this kid's got the dog in him, the way that he played at such a shitty offense with BC and still was able to thrive. He drew Antonio Brown comparisons because of this versatility, because of his competitiveness, despite the small size. Now, I think that's a bit of a reach here. We're talking about an all-time great in Antonio Brown, but the fact that that ceiling might exist makes Zay Flowers really, really intriguing to me. He's definitely been a riser throughout this process. He lands with the Ravens. That's tricky because it has been a graveyard for wide receivers. But this year, I think, promises to be much different because Todd Monken arrives, a much pass-happier aerial bonanza with the Bucs last time he was in the league. Had plenty of big play designs with the Bulldogs the last couple of years when he was back in the college game. You got Odell Beckham, Rashad Bateman, any of those three could be a true number one. To me, this is looking more like a 1A, 1B, 1C situation in a lower volume attack. So the landing spot, not great. But you got tons of long-term upside now that you got Lamar locked down there for the foreseeable future. Maybe Zay Flowers does become that go-to guy because we saw him do it at BC from every position of the wide receiver, all across the formation, every layer of the field. I definitely think Zay Flowers could thrive there. And then becomes the next question. After you've got these kind of first-round receiver locks, first-round drafted in the real league, first-round drafted in your rookie drafts, there's real no questions about that. Those, whatever order you put them, Addison, Quentin Johnson, Zay Flowers, those guys are going to be among the top guys, besides JSN, of course, drafted in your rookie drafts. But once those four guys are off the board, the big four, let's call them, who belongs next? I have a pretty big tier in my rankings, which you can again find at rotostreetjournal.com. And who is number five is a question that a lot of analysts are going to disagree with. And especially with my pick, nobody, I think, has this guy as high as me. That is Nathaniel Tank Dell. As I just said, nobody's going to be as high at number five for me. Going to Houston. They trade up. They pick him at number 69, ninth receiver off the board. Let's talk about why I am so hyped about this. Over the past two seasons, Tank Dell leads all receivers in receptions, 199, yards, 2,727 yards, and then scored 29 touchdowns, second. Very, very impressive. But he has a diminutive size. We're going to get into that. Elite, elite hands, acceleration, chunk plays, short, intermediate, deep. He can do it all. Everybody looking for the next Tyreek. He's not going to be that. Tyreek is just that good. No one's going to be that. But this is a very similar, comparable skill set here. And what I really, really love about this, I already love the kid. I had him at wide receiver 7 earlier. Just the last couple of days, we find out C.J. Stroud begged the team to take Tank Dell, after they worked out together in the combine, they kind of fell in love. And then we have C.J. Stroud saying, "We're going to come out and get you." He FaceTimes the Tank Dell and says, "I told them I want you." And then we got Nathaniel Dell getting that call. So they formed this great relationship. He bangs the table, C.J. Stroud, for him. You know, he's not going to want to look like an idiot. So he's definitely going to pepper his guy. He's already talked about being the starting slot receiver of the team. Houston Chronicle reporting that Tank Dell will start there. And that is a great spot. We saw JSN thrive out of the slot with C.J. Stroud before. He's not at that level, Tank Dell, not even close to JSN's level. But he does have very similar quicks to be able to just create so much space and then tons of potential damage after the catch. He's the type of guy that breaks one tackle and is completely gone, similar to Tyreek in that. And then you look at this situation. I mean, could he just lead this team in targets right off the bat? He had 291 targets, was an absolute hog, again, despite the size. which we'll dive into in a second. He could be a true 110, 120 target guy when you're compared with Nico Collins, Robert Woods, John Mechie. Maybe Mechie comes in and takes over, but there's a big question mark there. The wide receiver one role is wide open here. Now, the negatives we got, I guess I should finish with one last positive. After the catch, yak designed offense for the 49ers inspired scheme. Just perfect again for Tank Dell's skill set. He is 23 and a half years old, so he's older for this class. Only 5'8 and 165 pounds. That's tiny. Since 2000, there's never been an NFL receiver shorter or lighter to average even 11 fantasy points in a single season. So similar to Akeem, at the running back position, we're talking about an outlier of outliers. But just like Akeem, I love the landing spot, given his potential to lead this team in targets, given the fact that they have 357 targets, 64%, 2,860 air yards, 70% available, vacated last year. Tons of volume is up for grabs for a guy that has shouldered target hog upside in college. Again, CJ Stroud's guy, so much is stacking up well for Tank Dell. My number six receiver in my rankings is Jonathan Mingo, the fifth receiver off the board. He's picked at 39 to Carolina. He was only Brugler's wide receiver 12, but clearly the NFL teams liked him quite a bit more than the analytics community, than the film community. A lot of people speculated he was going to go high, especially after an insane combine. So let's talk about Mingo. His profile is complicated. He averaged 101.3 yards per game in 2021 before his injury. That's very damn solid. In 2022, he has 3.5 yards per route run, which would have led the Power 5 receivers, but then is moved to tight end on a fourth of his snaps following Michael Triggs' injury, and that really tanked his production. But the fact that he got moved to tight end just tells you, one, he's a great blocker. That was insane. Huge size as well in this, again, pipsqueak class. Mingo was a beast there. There's a Chase Claypool, Michael Pittman kind of blend to his game. And Frank Reich, looking at the Panthers in the landing spot, he definitely knew how to maximize Michael Pittman as that big power slot mold. 6'2", 220 pounds, big, big size. And who's he competing with? Adam Thielen? DJ Chark? There's very, very real upside for Mingo right off the bat to grow with young. I love when rookie and rookie come in together. They have the camps together before anybody else can even work with them. I love that. I think those two will grow together. There's definitely some long-term and short-term upside to Mingo, making him my sixth wide receiver prospect. Marvin Mims to Denver comes in at number seven among my wide receivers in 2023 fantasy rookie drafts. He goes pick 63, the eighth receiver off the board. He was ranked as Brugler's wide receiver 9. There's a lot to love and a lot of question marks here with Marvin Mims. Everyone in the analyst community seems to be absolutely in love with him. Makes sense why. Very high A dot, average depth of target. He had that speed slot type of role similar to a T.Y. Hilton, John Brown, and really thrived in that. But still, you know, what's he bring to the table in terms of like press? Not great. Very footwork and balance. But man, can he stretch the field with game-breaking speed. Definitely vertical in that sense. And he lands in a really good spot to potentially maximize that speed here in Denver. If everything lines up, of course. Let's talk about why that could be great and why it could be ugly. One, Russell Wilson. Just a couple seasons ago, was one of the best. You see those moon bombs going out from Russell Wilson, among the best deep passers in the league, until we had last year just an absolute horror show for Russell Wilson. It's also pretty crowded there with, you know, obviously Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy. How many targets can be going around? Well, Sean Payton, think about all those years of Nola. So many years where three-plus receivers were absolute beasts in eating. And then he loves the deep balls. He absolutely, Sean Payton, maximizes speed down the field. But that was with Drew Brees' pinpoint accuracy and absolute maestro for the scheme. Now, if Sean Payton revives Russ, Marvin Mims is going to start and thrive and be a beast right off day one. But we might have to wait till Russ gets replaced, and then it's like, what draft capital do they have to get an actual decent quarterback in there? Who really knows? So there's a lot of question marks. A lot of the value is tied to Russ. If it was a better quarterback, I'd probably have him 3 to 4 spot higher, Marvin Mims, a 5-star recruit coming into the game. But as it sits right now, a lot of question marks around his surroundings, but not his play caller and not his deep ball skill set. Both of those things will mesh perfectly. And if Russ regains that moon bomb upside, Marvin Mims will be in the absolute perfect spot, and Sutton could be gone as early as next year. Let's round out my top 10. This is a tough guy for me to rank. Jalin Hyatt goes to the Giants, pick 73, 10th wide receiver off the board. He was Brugler's number three wide receiver. And I'm really interested to see what he does. 87% of his snaps come from the slot, and he really dominated there. Now, the scheme was amazing. We've talked about Tennessee, how they just had receivers running wide open all over the field, and Hyatt was the most open of them all. He's got big explosive play the moment he steps on the field. He definitely is not the most well-rounded guy, but easy speed, confident ball skills as well. When got the home run hitting upside, but can also win those jump ball situations really good on contested catches. And then he lands with the Giants, which is a mixed bag. What I love about it, Brian Daboll, great play caller, creative mind, awesome, awesome spot in that sense. But then you got Wandale Robinson, who had higher draft capital last year, Paris Campbell, a new arrival, Sterling Shepard returning, Darren Waller now in town. All of those guys profile as slot, power slot type of guys, where Hyatt would most likely do his damage for the most part. But 67 catches, 1,267 yards, 15 touchdowns, definitely a tough avail because, you know, 4.4 speed, looks awesome, despite being, you know, should maybe be a little faster you'd hope for. He's the absolute king at manufacturing those touches. That's what Brian Daboll does best. That's what Hyatt can really ramp up and create space. So I think he's going to get schemed to perfection. Just a matter of how does that slot competition play out? Because they brought in so many guys here. It'll be really, really interesting. Definitely some boom or bust to this prospect. But I love the player. I love that Brugler loves the player. I love the team and the play calling. Those things could marry for a perfect baby here. Number nine for me, Jaden Reed goes to the Packers, pick 50, six receiver off the board. Brugler's wide receiver 10. But J.J. Zacharyson, another expert I really love, loves the kid. In fact, he comps him to Stephon Diggs. Let's talk about why. One of those guys, similar to Zay Flowers, played all over the formation and played really well all over the formation too. He's got great speed, good route tempo, good downfield ball skills. All the ingredients to play at any position and be an NFL playmaker. He's a little small, like this entire class here, and just like not great against the press, but he definitely has a little bit more versatility to his game than, say, a Marvin Mims. Love the fact that a lot of the smart analysts out there like JJ are calling for him. And then you look at the situation with Green Bay. Who knows what Jordan Love will turn into, but we certainly know they need a number two to Christian Watson right now. So we could see Jaden Reed really step in to a clear-cut number two role. And rounding out this tier, I got two more guys, and then it's a couple of sleepers, and we'll hit the tight ends and be out of here. We're cruising at this pace, maybe a little longer than an hour, but I like what I'm seeing. We've got seven questions in the mailbag. Awesome. Keep those coming in, Wolfpack. I will be sure to answer whatever we got. And just again, one last reminder, that thumbs up button is so greatly appreciated, especially if you're new here and you like what you're hearing. Please do consider subbing to the show. Rashee Rice going to the Chiefs, pick 55, the seventh wide receiver off the board. Pretty surprising in that sense. He led the FBS and set an SMU record with 112.9 yards per game last year, just ahead of Aldrick Robinson and Cortland Sutton and then Emmanuel Sanders. He beats them all out. That's a pretty good company between Sutton and Sanders to break those guys' records for SMU. And he did all this despite playing with a broken toe for 75% of the games. That's all impressive. He definitely has some areas that's inconsistent, average speed, but man, this guy can win the jump balls. Natural instincts after the catch, the best jump ball receiver in this class, in my opinion. Chiefs also vacated 15 targets in the red zone. That's the fourth most in the league. There's a role, even from day one, where he could just be a red zone threat. It's a wide open. I mean, MVS, the returning veteran. Obviously, I love Kadarius Toney. We've talked about him a lot, but Juju's gone. They really need somebody else to step up alongside Kadarius Toney. Who knows if it's Sky Moore? Maybe he has a better year too. But they really went out and got Rice. Clearly liked what they saw. He brings a different skill set to the table than anyone else they had. Oh, we haven't even mentioned Mahomes. He gets to play with the best quarterback in the entire league. Only Jalin Hyatt, Trey Palmer, Marvin Harrison Jr. averaged more yards per out run last year. There's definitely some intrigue here to Rashee Rice. And last is Josh Downs going to the Colts, pick 79, 12th receiver off the board, but Dame Brugler's wide receiver 6, a guy I was super high on coming into the draft. A little worried about that fall, the draft capital being pretty poor, but this could be a beautiful spot. He's definitely small and undersized, Josh Downs, but despite being small, he had the best contested catch rate in this entire class. It's a small sample size because he didn't have too many contested catches because the guy's so damn good at getting open. He has so much separation from receivers. He didn't have to make too many contested catches. But when he did, he was great at it. He drew, because of that, Tyler Lockett, Elijah Moore, those small receiver, but good in the against the defensive backs in those type of situations. Those are the comps he's drawn. The concern here, Anthony Richardson, we talked about the accuracy issues, how bad and scattershot he can be in the short to intermediate game. It's a run-heavy offense, and he might be Josh Downs the third at best on the target totem pole. You got Pittman. You got impressive Alec Pierce, sophomore, coming in this year. And then an inaccurate passer to boot here. Definitely some concerns with Josh Downs long-term. If this player had emerged in a better situation as a talent, I think he's top six in this class. I agree with Dane Brugler, but the situation does have me worried for short and long-term value, but definitely belongs in that tier with those other six names. Now, which wide receiver sleepers did we not talk about that are worth mentioning? There's certainly a few. Let's go into the four to five names I think you need to know. One is Tyler Scott. He goes to the Bears as the wide receiver 17 off the board, pick 133. I'm in love with this player. I hate the draft capital, but I think he is set up for great success. Maybe not this year, but down the line. Scott's a work in progress, but has very high end speed, 4.37 40 on his pro day. Very good short area suddenness, similar to Tank Dell in this sense, consistently creating his separation there. Adds immediate value at special teamer, but has that Tyler Lockett type upside. Both Claypool and Mooney are also free agents next year. I think he was by far the best steal of the draft going to the Bears. I think they got an absolute steal getting him as the wide receiver 17, pick 113, a name that you could take with your last, you know, fourth round pick, given how far he fell, that I could see developing to something really interesting as early as next season. Then you got Cedric Tillman going to the Browns, Brugler's wide receiver 8, the 11th receiver off the board at pick 74. Donovan Peoples-Jones did a pretty admirable job as the number two to Amari Cooper last year, but there's definitely room for a better number two to emerge, and I am a big fan. I think Tillman does everything DPJ does, but has a bigger body and potentially even better. Big target, big acceleration, very strong play strength and ball skills, exploiting that perimeter matchups. He has all the starting traits for an X receiver. He was banged up last year, and then Jalin Hyatt was able to emerge ahead of him, potentially similar to Hyatt and Hendon Hooker, maybe part of this insane scheme, but definitely has the potential to develop into a solid number 2-3 and have a good career if Deshaun Watson can regain what made him so special. And you got Kayshon Booty going to the Patriots, not just for the name. That's not the only reason I love this kid. Coming out of LSU, 22nd receiver off the board, pick 187. It was a tough overall year. Definitely a lot of inconsistent moments, tons of insane flashes, but also a lot of those dogging it. Does the effort really exist? Does this kid really want it right now? Type of question marks with Kayshon Booty. He was wide open depth chart here with New England, though. Patricia Hell is over, and I like what Bill O'Brien is going to bring to the table for the Pats. You got Jacoby Myers gone, and Kayshon Booty did his best work out of the slot. We know the Pats historically have maximized those type of skill sets. So entering the year, Kayshon Booty was considered one of the top five prospects in the league. Obviously, again, that inconsistent 22 was a little bit concerning here, but he had erratic quarterback play and still made them look a lot better than they were more often than not. He has big playability. He's got great contact balance, good body strength, great after the catch. All the things you're looking for your slot, racking up the yak. Definitely an interesting, tough evaluation because the effort level doesn't always seem there, but the ability is certainly there. So if Bill Belichick, if this coaching staff can really light that fire under Kayshon Booty, he has the chance to be their number one receiver as early as this year. We will see. And the last name I wanted to highlight is Puka Nacua going to the Rams, the 20th receiver off the board, 177 overall. He was only Brugler's wide receiver 28, but I think he is underselling what Puka can bring to the table. He has to stay healthy. He's definitely dealt with his injury concerns, but smart, tough, athletic, and similar to a lot of these other guys we highlighted, can play all over the formation. He is a yak beast as well, Nacua. He averaged 7.1 yards after the catch, in addition to 3.5 yards per route run towards the top of the class in all of those. He's not an insane athlete, but he can really, really win contested balls, win after the catch. Very versatile. He brings a lot of Cooper Kupp elements to his games, and now he gets to learn under Cooper Kupp, who is not on his back nine quite yet, but he's aging, and I just love the Robert Woodsian traits as well. We've seen that type of player thrive in McVay, and who does Puka really have to beat out? Maybe it would be tough as a rookie to just step right in, but Van Jefferson is the number two here right now with Allen Robinson now gone. I think there's a lot of upside, just even from day one and certainly down the road. And now we'll wrap this up. I only have a few tight ends I really want to harp on. We're already over an hour, and that's what I wanted to be under. So I will make this quick at the tight end position. Last call here for some thumbs up button. If you're still with us, if you start from the top and you're still here, amazing. I can't believe you put up with me for that long. So greatly appreciate it. But the thumbs up do help us grow so much, Wolfpack. Thanks again so much for being here. Let's wrap up with tight ends. It is a historic class. Very, very good. One of the best classes to come in the last 10 years. And at the top for me is Dalton Kincaid. Does he belong in a tier of his own? Let's debate it. Goes pick 25, first tight end off the board to the Bills. And I think this is a perfect fit. Yes, I know Dawson Knox is there. Yes, I know Dawson Knox had double-digit touchdowns just two seasons ago, and he's a big favorite of Josh Allen. Kincaid is three levels ahead of Dawson Knox as an athlete, as a player. He's definitely still developing as a blocker, but we don't give a shit about that. For fantasy, we need the guy that just led the FBS in tight ends and receiving yards, 74.2. Receptions per game, 5.8. Ahead of Michael Mayer, who's often considered one of the best tight end prospects of this class, I think it's Kincaid. He's got a basketball background, so he's got nice fluid movement. You always hear about the Jimmy Grahams and the boarding it out in the red zone. That's where he's going to be an absolute monster. Immediately, day one, 10-plus touchdown upside. If Dawson Knox can catch 10 touchdowns from Josh Allen, Kincaid could catch 15. That's how much better he is. He's got literally Rob Gronkowski type of upside within this insanely explosive scheme. 6'4", 246, great ball skills, great fluidity for that size. I think this is not even a tight end. This is a big slot on a team that desperately wants a slot. McKenzie didn't do shit. Shakir maybe develops. We'll see. I like the kid, but Kincaid could be their legitimate day one and all season starter in the slot as a big body tight end. Unbelievable upside with him. Belongs in your fantasy first rounds. The only tight end, I believe, that has that type of upside. So after Kincaid, though, who's next? The clear number one, don't think it's debatable. This is where the debates come in. Michael Mayer, or do we have Sam Laporta? Let's discuss the strengths and weaknesses of both and pick one overall. Let's start with Michael Mayer. He's the third tight end off the board, pick 35, ranked as Dane Brugler's tight end one, 6'4", 250 pounds. Oh, he's a big boy. You got to like that. He's decent as a blocker, but like I just said with Kincaid, we do not care about that. Very controlled athleticism for his size. Very strong after the catch. Great through contact. Very good intangibles. Everybody just raves about how hard he works. He can play inline. He can play split out. He had 61.9 of his snaps inline, 40% nearly out wide. And at a program that is known, Notre Dame, great tight ends. 14 Irish players have been drafted to the position since 2001. He lit up. He set positional records for single season and career with catches, receiving yards, and receiving. Again, good body control, great ball skills, productive underneath, big seam target. And now he goes to a Raiders team that just traded away Darren Waller. He could immediately step in to that Darren Waller role and thrive. The Raiders led the NFL with 17 inside the 10 targets, 51 and a half of them vacated after Waller departed, 191 totals, targets up for grabs, top 10 in the NFL. A wide open number two role other than Devontae Adams is up for grabs. And we know Matt McDaniels in the past when he has elite tight end prospects has maximized them to the fullest. So if Mayer lives up to his college pedigree at the NFL level, he's got the perfect coach, the perfect opportunity in terms of vacated targets to do some great damage. But Sam Laporta also lands in an amazing spot. He's the second tight end off the boards. He comes from the tight end factory of Iowa and was the best tight end by the numbers to play there. He was the all-time leader in receptions, 153 at the tight end position. He played a ton split out wide, 49.4% in line, and then more slots, more snaps actually coming from the slot or out wide, 50.6% of his snaps out wide. You love to see this. It's a program known for breeding the tight ends, and he, like I just said, was among the best. He makes himself available mid-route. He knows where to drop and sit in the zones. He has very strong functional strength as a pass catcher. Not great as a blocker, but that's what I think the common theme with these tight ends. We don't care about that. He is insane speed as well. Nearly ran a 4.59 at 6'3", you know, 240 pounds. That's a ridiculous size speed. And then you look at the competition, Brock Wright, Shane Zylstra, should I even say competition at this point? He even took Laporta three snaps out of the Wildcat. Such a Dan Campbell guy, just nose to the grindstone. Let's get it going. They were so pumped. This is as pumped as they were for Jahmyr Gibbs. They were nearly as pumped on those pre-draft videos to get Sam Laporta. They had the chance to get Michael Meyer. They took Laporta instead for the higher athleticism upside. To me, I'm picking between them, though. They both have great cases. I like Michael Mayer just a little bit more as a player, as a historic track record. I think they both are in beautiful landing spots, beautiful situations. But I think Michael Meyer, I just like a little bit more as a player, and he edges him out as my tight end too. Now, the best of the rest is only two names I want to highlight, and then it's on to all of your questions. We're up to 13 now. Love it. Hey, keep them coming in, Wolfpack. We're going to get to those momentarily. But the two Lukes highlight the best of the rest. Musgraves, fourth tight end off the board, pick 42 to Green Bay. Brugler's tight end three, and then Luke Schoonmaker, the fifth tight end off the board, pick 58, going to the Cowboys. This is going to be the classic debate. Which one do you go for? It's the talent versus the situation. Let's highlight both for each of these guys. Musgraves is the one edging out the talent. He's a very great, impressive size, speed athlete, a gazelle. He was a high school track type of athlete, lacrosse player, skiing, one of those versatile just athletes that really can get it done. Got great hip fluidity as both a pass catcher and a blocker. He must continue to kind of, he's new to the game and is a little bit raw in that sense. But as a raw athlete, I mean, he is just dynamic at all levels. High level athlete, good route runner, definitely a solid blocker compared to the other guys. So complete tight end, maybe the best, and he's still really developing. So I'm very intrigued to see what he does. He's certainly the player. Plus you got Green Bay wide open depth chart here. They did draft another really impressive tight end there in Tyler Kraft. But I personally, or Tucker Kraft rather, I personally prefer Musgraves there. And then you got Luke Schoonmaker, who lands in the best spot for a tight end in the entire draft. Let's see what he can do here. He himself, not overly awe-inspiring. He's efficient in his route. He catches the ball decently, but he doesn't do much after the catch. Only four of his 52 receptions have gone over 25 yards. Just kind of an average guy. He's got size. He's got speed. He's got the strength to be more. We just didn't really see much of that. But maybe he doesn't need that much more of it because Dalton Schultz was nothing special. And he saw 89, 104, and 89 targets across his last 3 years. All of those were among the top five for tight ends. Dak loves to throw to his tight end. And Schoonmaker doesn't have to be anything special. He could just have a quarterback that wants to pepper him, and maybe that's all we need. I do think Musgrave gets the slight edge as my tight end four here because he has such a higher ceiling just as a player with a similar potential path to volume. But I do know Schoonmaker will probably make the more immediate year one impact given how often Dak and the Cowboys like to pepper the position. All righty, Wolfpack. Whew. We just made it through every single position. Nearly 60 athletes discussed. I do have them all ranked in a big board as well. If you want to see that, that's over at rotostreetjournal.com. You can find all these positional rankings and the guys even below them as well. And then probably even more valuable for you, maybe I'll do this as a separate show someday, is seeing all of them together in a top 60. You have that big board. Where should they all go? Where are the tier gaps, the drops, all that good stuff? You can find that over at rotostreetjournal.com. Let's check out who do we have with us tonight. What kind of questions do we have here? Let's dive in. My guy, Giuseppe, what's going on? Jeff Lee, all the Wolfpack legends are here. Wolf, good to see you, pal. Looking for you to fall on the truth and CJ this year. Thank you. Great to see you, Jeff. Thanks for tuning in and saying hello. So pumped to see you. Perfect landing spot for Kendre Miller. He will be an RB1. So Toon's disagreeing with me. I'm into it. I need to just kind of, everybody is talking about Kendre Miller being the next big thing. I loved what I saw on the tape, too, for TCU. I don't know why. It's the lack of the pass catching that's really dragging me down, but maybe Kenny just wasn't used the right way. I don't know. I just haven't got there yet on Kendre Miller, but I am willing to be convinced. He's certainly a type of player I'm willing to bet on. John, what's going on? Off topic from the stream. Hey, I'm happy to answer any questions, man. It's no problem. If You're still here. I hope you are. If not, hope you catch the replay and see me answer your question here. Being offered Pittman for Ayuk, do I accept? Ooh, this is a good one. I like both these players long-term. To me, I think I go Ayuk. Now, it's tricky to know, like, is he going to stay with the 49ers? But I love the player. I think he's a little bit better as a player than Pittman. And now you have Anthony Richardson coming in, which could be a little bit sketchy. I think they're going to become very, very run-heavy, the Colts are. And that's going to really tap what Pittman could do. It's going to cap his ceiling, rather. So to me, I just think Ayuk's the better player and the better situation. Who knows? They're both in the last year of their deals, so we'll see what happens from there. But they're so close for me. I think Ayuk gets the slight edge because I do imagine, Chinham, he had him in his doghouse early on in his career. He loves the kid. He couldn't speak higher about him these last couple of years. So I'm going Ayuk there very slightly just because I think he's definitely staying in a nice ripe spot. We've already seen him thrive. Hey, Brett Jones, thank you so much for coming in and tuning in. What offseason? RSJ never sleeps. Hey, Charlie, I took a little bit of a hibernation, not going to lie, this offseason. I haven't been live in, I think, close to a month and a half. So got a little nap in, let's call it. Doing a lot of productive things for RSJ, but just not the in-your-face type of situation. But, man, wait till you guys see some of the stuff we've been drawing up. Let's see what we got from Charlie as well. I'm not sure how big the aerial pie will be in Indy, but Downs was so – oh, he is – and I know you're a UNC guy, Charlie, so I definitely trust your take. He is – so damn talented. Here we go. David Campanella. I was wondering where the hell David Campanella is. 821 decides to show up. What the hell? No, I'm just kidding, David. Great to see you, man. I'm looking glad. I just can't see. I'm testing out sitting further away because we're cutting up clips and it's really zoomed in when we cut up clips. So I wanted to sit far away. My eyesight's goddamn horrendous, though. So I needed to put the glasses on. I hope it doesn't look horrible. Apparently, I look classy for it. So, I'm glad it looks okay. Hopefully I don't look too toolish in the glasses. Hopefully the glare's not too bad. Thanks for tuning in, Campanelli. I'm glad you're here. Wolf, I missed you. Life is... I missed you too, David. Life was incomplete with all of you. I had my hibernation. It felt good. It was nice to do some screenwriting, wedding, different things that just conquered my attention for a month and a half or so. But now that I'm back with my kin, my true kin, all you fantasy fanatics out there. Missed the first half of this. I'll have to go back. Thank you, Jeremiah. I'm glad. I hope you do enjoy it and listen in. You got picks 12 or 1.0. Okay, so we got 1.2, 1.3. This is why we need the glasses, David Campanelli. 1.2, 1.3, 1.5, and 1.9. Jeremiah, you are loaded up. My God. Now, it sucks that, you really want the 101 in this draft because Bijan is just that damn good. I wonder if you could package, 1.2 and 1.5. But the top six is really, really good if it's super flex. Because then you're looking at Jahmyr Gibbs, 1-2, JSN, 1-3. And then you can get whatever quarterback is still left there, whether it's Richardson, whether it's Bryce Young. Maybe you have a choice of all three of them. Maybe Stroud's there, my quarterback one of this class, as you rewind and you'll find out. So you are really well set up in those first three. Now, if you can somehow do 1-2 and 1-9, and bump up to one and they get Bijan instead of Gibbs, I'm all for it. Because I think after those top six, if you look at the rankings again, roadstreetjournal.com, you find those rankings, you'll notice I have the first six in a couple elite tiers. And then it does, I think, dive off pretty big in this class. I just raved about Addison and Quentin Johnston and some of these running backs, Devin Akane. There's guys I do really, really love. Kincaid. You could build a roster out of these rookies that in a couple years could be just dominating the league. But if there's some way you can package some of those things, put them together and get to 101 for Bijan, say you got to do it. But you're really, really set up with three picks in the top six. And I just love this top six of this class. I do think it drops off, but you can dip in three times to that top six. Whew, you're going to have yourself some beasts there. And if you already have a quarterback situation figured out, Jeremiah, and you can get Gibbs, JSN, and then, another top five talent, all the better. So good luck figuring that out. I'm sure we'll be talking and helping you figure that out this offseason. Wolfpack, that's all we got for you. A loaded rookie rundown show. I hope it helped you kind of get a grand scheme of all these rookies, where they landed, how the fits are. If you enjoyed it and you haven't already, please do consider that thumbs up button. All our content is at rotostreetjournal.com where we breed and feed you fantasy wolves. Until next time, Wolfpack, and a world of fantasy sheep, be the wolf. Later, guys.